Welcome to another Bitcoin consciousness conversation. Today I'm speaking with SourceNode, and I gotta say, man, this has been a long time coming, and I don't know, I'm just feeling really, really excited about whatever it is we're going to get into today. So let's get into it. How you doing?
I'm doing great, man. Glad to be here.
Yeah. So, did we get initially connected through Ioni Appleberg?
That is possible.
Okay.
I think I found you through the Decentralized Consciousness group somehow.
Yeah.
Yeah. I liked the branding. It really resonated with me.
Yeah.
But what we've been? Could be.
Yeah, it might have been. It might have been somebody else. I can't remember because I did a pod with him, and then I remember he connected me with someone, and I thought it was you. But anyway, super excited to have you in our community group, and your inputs have been super helpful. You've got a lot of really great resources to share, which I appreciate. But I think one thing that really excited me to talk about today was some of the projects that you've been working on. So the ones that I would like to touch on, there were the podcast, which the name is escaping me now. It's like, yeah, I'm not even going to try. It's
the Holotropic Renaissance Lecture Series.
Yes, super, yeah. super cool project. I came to this conversation unprepared. I haven't finished it, but it is a super cool project, which actually if I'm not mistaken, has led you to your current project, and we'll get into that too. But you also started a book this past Thanksgiving, which is awesome, and yeah, the new podcast, I guess. So it was those three things that I wanted to cover. So first, I guess, because I truly don't know a ton about you. So whatever you're willing to dox, I'd love to learn more and about those projects.
Sure. Yeah. So the lecture series was a passion project that culminated from just really wanting to share the tools that helped me to liberate myself from the matrix, the fiat matrix, the big pharma matrix, the psychology today, sort of everyday rat race existence that most people are stuck in. I'm both blessed and grateful to have found my way out of that to a large degree. At the same time, I'm still in it because everyone that I know and love is still in it. But that's why I made the lecture series. I made it to provide some breadcrumbs to kind of indicate what I see as the tools I use to get myself out, right? It's not what's going to work for everybody. But I also created it more broadly to support Bitcoiners, anybody who has any interest in developing a spiritual understanding or a understanding of psychedelics and how they're used in a responsible manner. That's why I created it, because I know there's a lot of overlap between Bitcoin and psychedelics, and there's a lot of Bitcoiners that don't know anything about psychedelics. Mm-hmm. And I thought it might be helpful to make a tool to kind of bring the Bitcoin ethos into that space and to bring the psychedelic knowledge into the Bitcoin space. So a bridge of sorts, I suppose. Yeah. And at the same time, it documented my personal spiritual journey. I've been recording a new episode once a year since I finished the series. So I've got three episodes out over the last 3 years.
Yeah. And, yeah. The integrations, right?
Yeah.
The integration.
Yeah. Episodes. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So that's the lecture series. I could go on to the next one if you want.
Well, let's stop. Yeah, I just want to talk a little bit about this project, because I think what's first of all really, really cool is that I can sense, even with the first few episodes that I have listened to, I can sense that you genuinely just wanted to do this, and there wasn't necessarily an intention that was rooted in like a fiat nature. So you weren't trying to get a bunch of followers. You weren't trying to, you know, build this show. You genuinely just wanted to make something and share it with others because you thought it would be valuable. And what's really cool about that is it's kind of led now to the project that you are working on now. So it's hard for us to understand, coming from the fiat world where it's all designed to be action and result and planning, you know, planning action and result, but instead, you know, you just took a path of genuine desire to create and share something which you think is valuable. And it's opened a big door for you, which is really, really cool. I think I want to touch on, I'm really curious about your experience, and maybe you do because I haven't gotten to these episodes, but to touch on some of the experiences that you've had with psychedelics, or at least I know that they can be very personal, but do you have some stories that you could share?
Oh, sure. Yeah. And I could be as specific or non-specific as I want. So I appreciate mm-hmm. the sensitivity around that. I also appreciate you seeing my intention behind it, because it really has been a labor of love more than anything. Yeah. And you're right. I didn't do it in the traditional way. You know, I didn't do it to gain followers, and I haven't, but it's connected with the right people, and right. That's what it's all about. So,
and what's cool is like, and Marty, sorry to interrupt you, Marty, Marty Bent, he started a newsletter just for his friends and family. And it was called Marty's Bent or something like that. And it was about Bitcoin, and now he's grown, you know, into this, his project, into this big podcast, which is now TFTC. And it's the same exact thing. It's just like, I just want to share this with the world. And, you know, oh, hey, you know, I see someone in my life who I think would be interested in this. I'll share it with them. You know, it's kind of like just having this thing that you've created in your back pocket that you can share with individuals whenever it feels right, kind of thing.
Right. Yeah. That's exactly, there's a couple episodes on my podcast, for example, there's one about crypto that if somebody comes mm-hmm. at me trying to talk to me about crypto, like I can send them a link to this episode.
Yeah.
And exactly, it's a pre-rehearsed conversation, so I don't have to get into it, you know? So it's really a tool for my own efficiency in a way.
Dude, I love that idea, because that one is a really important elevator pitch to have ready.
Yeah, it's constant. And then it's up to them fully, right? It's like, if you want to listen to this and put in 45 minutes to consider the arguments that are put forth, then you can probably save yourself a lot of trouble. And if not, then, you know, whatever. So it's up to you. So
super cool.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry, I interrupted you. We were talking about some stories of the psychedelics.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no problem. So stories. I mean, where do I start? I could start at the first time I took mushrooms. Mm-hmm. I was 16 years old, and I was with some friends that I didn't select in a very careful way, because I didn't know what I was selecting for. You know, nobody was guiding me. I didn't have any real idea about the proper use of mushrooms or how they even differed from marijuana, which was the only other drug I had tried at that point. It made sense for me to go from a natural drug to a natural drug before doing anything else. I was very intentional. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'd heard a little bit from Terrence McKenna and some other people, but they don't really talk about like the practice of what to prepare for when it comes to mushrooms. So that's really what, where I focused with the podcast. But yeah, I took them in a natural setting, in a place where I knew I wasn't going to run into law enforcement. And I knew I was familiar enough and far enough from society that I could be, you know, free. Mm-hmm. And I had a really profound day. I had a day that showed me that there's more to reality than what meets the eye on any given day. And I spent some time inside a cave by myself, which was in a way an introduction to my mind, like the depths of my own psychology. Being alone in a cave on mushrooms was like, I could sort of see the voices or the chatter, the noise inside the signal inside my brain. And that awareness has stayed with me in a subtle way since then. Yeah. That's kind of developed into where I am now, where I can really sit back and like watch my thoughts pass by. Not all the time. It depends on how my nervous system is in that moment, but in general, I can usually watch my thoughts pass as they're arising. And I do owe a lot of that to psychedelics. But as I say, I think I said it in the podcast as well, there's proof of work required, right? Like psychedelics do not make you more spiritual. They don't make you a better person. They don't make you smarter. They don't make you more sensitive. They don't do anything for you, actually. They can show you the way that you can do things for yourself. If you want to take them that way. Yeah. So that's kind of a vague story about it, but it was impactful to say the least.
I have a quick interjection. Sure. I mentioned to a friend the power of psychedelics, and he kind of wrote it off as like as people basically hallucinating, but believing that the hallucination is something more. Was there kind of an aha moment for you to basically tell you that while it was, I guess, a hallucination, but to give you the sense that this is real? What I'm experiencing is not just in my own mind. I'm experiencing something greater than just my physical body right now. Or was it purely just like a knowing?
Yeah. There's so many different layers in answering that, in the same way that understanding Bitcoin has a lot of back and forth, like two steps forward and one step back as far as it comes to FUD. It was very similar for me in terms of psychedelics. And seeing the distortions, right? I wouldn't necessarily call them hallucinations, but the visual distortions that occur when you take larger doses of psychedelics.
Right.
There's two different schools of thought generally. The first is you're seeing something that's not there, and it's an overlay that your mind or your eyes are placing on the reality around you. And then the other school of thought is that the psychedelics are removing an overlay and allowing you to see what's really happening.
Right. Yeah. It's like, yeah, putting some kind of filter to the side so you can see.
Exactly. Yeah. And I subscribe to the second school of thought, mm-hmm. but at the same time, you have to be very cautious with that, because if you think that you have some profound knowledge that other people don't have, you can end up in this rather arrogant place where it's safe to make a lot of assumptions.
Yeah.
And that's a constant practice to avoid doing that.
Interesting. Have you read any, I think the author's name is Carlos Santana. Have you ever read any?
Carlos Santana was a musician, but I know the guy, Carlos Castaneda, I think, is who you're talking about.
Exactly. Santana is the guitar guy. So yeah, you've read his stuff.
I've not actually. I do know somebody that worked with him for years, but I haven't read his books.
Yeah.
I'm curious about them, but it's not something that's drawn a lot of attention from me so far.
Yeah, I think you'd find him really interesting. I've only read the first book of his. I think I started the second, but the first one where he meets, he's like a Mexican native Mexican. So he's like part of a tribe, and he's very much into taking psychedelics as a spiritual practice and on a regular basis and using it as a tool. And so he was teaching Carlos about all of this. And at one point in the book, he's doing a ceremony with a couple other tribesmen, and Carlos actually didn't take any of this particular psychedelic, but he was there just observing, and he could see that, I think there were three men there. He could see these three men were basically all sharing the same experience together. They were seeing they were seeing the same things. They were interacting with the same things. He could just see that the way that they were acting, they were all experiencing the exact same thing. And, his teacher says, at many times, like when he first introduces him to, and I can't remember the first psychedelic that he does, but when he first introduces him to, there's basically a spirit to the psychedelic, and he says, this is what the experience is going to be like. This is, when you ingest, like the greater consciousness of this psychedelic and you become one with it, here is the personality of the psychedelic and how it shows up for people. It's like it's a being, which is just insane to consider, but this is how a lot of people experience it, which just blows my mind.
The more that I the more time that I spend with real medicine people that practice with plant medicine, ayahuasca, wachuma, hape, combo, which is not a plant medicine, but it's a frog, a bufo, which is a toad. The people that really understand the ecological connection of that medicine to the planet.
Yeah.
And really, really work with it in a deep way, have changed my view of nature, of myself, of everything. And it's a beautiful practice. I mean, it's something that's largely lost in the influencer world of ayahuasca podcasters. Like, I think that there's a lot of sort of popularization of plant medicines as this thing that's in vogue because it's taboo. And I think that's a real bastardization of the actual practice of sitting in ceremony. Not to condemn anyone. It's just, I've seen the difference, between like the Burning Man Instagram person and like the person that sits in the jungle for a week alone. It's like a very different
vibe.
Yeah,
totally. It's a little sad to see it becoming somewhat of a meme. Like, I saw a headline somewhere and it had a picture of Aaron Rodgers doing a ceremony. And it said something about like psychedelic bros or something, and the psychedelic bro culture. And I'm just like, man, this is not good. But I don't know. It's sort of like Bitcoin in that it's kind of got to go through this bro culture to really for us to really figure it out, because when we approach the subject of Bitcoin, most of us end up down the shitcoin rabbit hole to some degree. And it's because we're approaching it from the fiat consciousness. We're approaching it from lower consciousness, you know, so it's all we know. And, you know, until we move into a higher state and viewing it from that higher perspective and understanding, because really what are you trying to achieve? And I've never done any psychedelics, but you know, the objective with taking of any of these, from what I can see, and you know, from like the perspective of Carlos's book, the objective here is to be a powerful tool to connect you more deeply to yourself so that you can show up as connected to your authentic self in this life as possible. So, you know, similar to meditation and shadow work, or even things like Reiki or yoga. And it's just, it's like anything else. It's a tool to show you things. There are lessons to be learned. There are, you know, you can set the intention to approach things that you have never approached, traumas that you've been too afraid to approach at other points in your life. And, you know, that this might be that ramrod that breaks you through that brick wall, you know, kind of thing. So right. Anyway, I'm rambling, but.
No, that was all true. I totally feel the same way.
Cool. So before we move on, do you have any other experiences that you felt like sharing?
Yeah. But not right now. Okay. Yeah. Another time.
That's all good. So is there anything else you wanted to cover on the podcast project, or would you like to talk about the new podcast that you're starting up?
Yeah, let's talk about the new one.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So because I created the other one, I had a landing page and a platform to send people to, and I'd shared it with a handful of friends, and it's gotten around a little bit, sort of word of mouth with certain people on Noster and some of their friends and such. And it's gotten some traction there. And then I saw Tor do a podcast with Peter McCormick about his Ibogaine trip. And I don't know if you're familiar with it. It's a very powerful plant / pharmaceutical medicine, which is helpful for breaking people out of tough patterns, inviting trauma to surface in a way that can help people break addictions and change other habits. And he shared his story on the podcast, and I thought, oh, that's really interesting. I never expected him to go and do plant medicine. Like, he didn't strike me as the type to do that. And at the same time, I literally made this podcast for people like that. People who were Bitcoiners that had been in for a while, who were a little bit more on the straight-laced conservative side, but were interested in learning about psychedelics. So I reached out to him and I sent him the podcast. And he ended up listening to every single episode. It's like 16 and a half hours of content. It's not a small undertaking. It's an audiobook. And not only did he do that, but he also shared it and said, you know, this is one of my favorite podcasts from the whole year, which I was really honored by.
So cool.
That was such a confirmation. Like, I think for me, if nothing else ever came of this podcast, just that alone was like, okay, good. I did what I needed to do, you know?
Right.
But
you're inspiring me to do more solo episodes.
Oh yeah, go for it, man. I'd love to hear more of your thoughts just unfolding. But and on top of that, I've had many other great connections happen through it, including this one. So yeah, then I ran into him in Prague at the conference, and I introduced myself by my normal name, my real name. And he looked at me kind of confused. And then I told him my NIM, and he was like, oh, yeah. Source Node, what's up, man? You know? And it was fun. Yeah. It was like a fun little meeting. And then after talking to him for a little while, he invited me to help him start a podcast. So we're in the beginning phases of, we're in the middle of building a studio. We haven't invited guests to interview yet, but we are going through the flows of like how to edit and distribute the podcast. So I don't know. Yeah. I think certainly Q1 will have some podcasts out.
Very cool.
Yeah, it's exciting, but it's actually changed my entire life. Like I moved physically in order to do this. So
how long were you in your previous location?
I was living in South Carolina for 8 years, and it was good for me because I'm originally from California, and California is beautiful and it's wild, and there's many interesting values there. There's also a lot of values there that I don't agree with anymore. Mm-hmm. And moving to South Carolina provided me with a good balance, you know, to show like the importance of family and the importance of tradition and the importance of religion and all of these things that are kind of thrown out in the postmodern Californian social environment. So,
yeah. So what's the subject of the new podcast?
So the title of it is Be Real, the letter B and R E E L, like Be Real from a film, with the double entendre, of course, Be Real. The idea is to have Bitcoin adjacent conversations, but it's not going to be like another Think Boy talk about Bitcoin from a million different angles podcast. And I don't think the plan is to just hit the current events. The plan is to build something that's lasting and to talk about real core issues that are developing in the world, and also to lay a groundwork for what a hyper Bitcoinized future could look like. And I think that's the part that I'm most interested in. Mm-hmm. And Core is currently traveling all around the world, meeting people in different places, gathering stories, making connections to see, to get a vision of what this is going to look like.
Mm-hmm. Man, that sounds awesome. I'm super excited for you guys and to hear your very first episode.
Thanks, man.
Yeah. So are you in fiat land while you do this too?
No. No.
Cool.
I mean, yes. Like I live in the world. I'm not.
Right. Right.
I'm not in a cabin in Montana with my.
Yeah, right. Toy,
you know, but I quit my fiat job at the end of 2020. I used to work in automotive manufacturing. I was in sales and account management in a manufacturing company. Yeah. And I did that for about 6.5 years. I was quite proficient at it, but it wasn't something I was passionate about. Mm-hmm. And I knew that I couldn't dive into the topics that I was interested in while staying in that world. There was no way that I could have done what I've done in terms of the podcast I created or the work and reading I needed to do in order to put it out had I stayed there. But in that time, I've spent a lot of time just contemplating life, thinking about what I really want, because I was following incentives that were not my own. And now
that's fiat for you.
Yeah. What's that?
I said, that's fiat. That's like the definition of fiat, following incentives that are not your own.
Them telling you what's important, right? That's literally it. Yeah. So when it was up to me to decide what was important, the question goes real deep. I mean, it's literally is the why of life, right? Mm-hmm. To be or not to be. Like what is the point? that's what you get down to. And anybody who has the capacity to do whatever they want will reach that point. And so I started to look inward and to find answers that were more sustainable and more aligned with my true self, which I had completely lost in the process of going to school and getting a corporate job. I didn't know who I was. And so it took some time to find that.
Yeah. Yeah, man. I mean, I struggle with that even now. I don't have a fiat job anymore. And I still wonder sometimes if I'm, you know, following the flow of my highest self, or if I'm trying to satisfy some twisted filter on the way that I see the world. I think, well, certainly I still struggle with scarcity patterns. Mm. I have such a hard time, you know, with, and you hear this in spiritual circles all the time, money is love, money is just energy, yada yada. But for me to practically say, okay, this month I'm not gonna worry about money, I'm not going to take responsibility, I'm not going to like budget or plan, I'm just gonna spend what I feel like spending, it's just really, really difficult for me to make that leap, especially because I have a family. I've got three kids. Mm-hmm. So you know, so it's things like that that are still distortions on the way that I see the world, which prohibit me from living fully authentically, I think. But
yeah, I feel that, man. I definitely struggle with the same thing, have struggled with the same thing. And I know that when you end up on the spiritual path, you get into this mindfulness of, well, you know, if you live in abundance, then everything comes to you. You don't need to worry right. about anything. And yeah. if you live in the moment, in the present moment, that's all you need. Yeah. And at the same time, as a Bitcoiner, I'm like, yeah, but time preference, like time preference yeah. requires you to think about the future. So yeah. finding a balance between those two is a very interesting sort of, it's not a conflict, but it's like there's a tug of war playing out in both yes. directions. Yeah. But the interesting yeah. thing about it is that like we live in a society that has a very, very high time preference. And so our baseline is skewed towards that. If we were living in a society that had a lower time preference on average, it'd be a lot easier for us to make responsible decisions without thinking about them. But if you mm-hmm. just go with the flow all the time, you can blow your entire paycheck and then some very easily. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it just depends on how conscious you are of it, and also how much you think you need versus how much you want or how much you can have, or, you mm-hmm. know. It's a constant battle. I think I'm living very responsibly, mm-hmm. but I do enjoy myself at the same time. I've traveled a lot this year, and those experiences traveling, I can't possibly replace them. Yeah. I went and did the rite of passage with Captain Sid in Thailand this year, and it was expensive and sats. Like I'm gonna look back at that trip 20 years from now and be like, "Whoa, dude!" But
yeah, right.
It was one of the best things I've ever done in my life, and I will never regret it.
I haven't heard of this.
So my buddy, Captain Sid, mm-hmm. who I met in Prague also, Bitcoin Prague is a great conference, good vibes there. He does a motorcycle tour in Northern Thailand, and I specify Northern Thailand because it's a way different vibe than like Bangkok and Pattaya and Phuket and all that. Like it's, Northern Thailand is like a different country almost. And he takes you around to all these little hidden nooks and crannies and places to go eat food and windy roads in the mountains. Meanwhile, you're on a bike with a bunch of Bitcoiners that have all been vetted. Like you have to get references to go. Mm-hmm. And he confirms that everybody's a real Bitcoiner before they're invited.
Yeah,
and it's about 8 days. And it was some of the wildest riding I've ever seen. I like rode my motorcycle through mud past elephants and like all kinds of stuff.
No way. So cool.
Yeah. It was amazing.
So is he from Thailand or how did this start for him?
He's from Philly, I think. somewhere in the East Coast, I'm pretty sure Philly.
Jeez.
Maybe Chicago. Gosh, I should know this, but he moved to Thailand, I think, before COVID. And now he's met a girl over there. He actually proposed to her while we were on the trip, which was adorable.
Yeah,
it was easy for him to get it on camera that way. We're at this beautiful restaurant in the mountains, and he proposed to her. And so, yeah, no, he's staying in Thailand. He loves it there.
Way cool. So, yeah, once again, somebody just following their greater excitement, basically.
Yeah.
So I think like the ideal, the model of the universe that I'm finding is consistent among a lot of material and people through podcasts, is that the universe is designed to continue to evolve. And if we find ourselves hung up on something like a scarcity pattern, we will continue to build circumstances in our reality which challenge that scarcity mindset. And once we are ready to move out of some of these patterns and programs, we will do so in a way that meets us where we are. And what I mean by that is if I were to tomorrow just be like, all right, I have these scarcity patterns, but to hell with it, I'm just going to go for it. I'm not even going to worry about it. I'm just going to spend whatever I feel like spending. I feel like I want this in my life. I feel like I want this, and I'm not even going to care. What I'll probably find is at the end of the month is I probably will have some of those fears come true. And the reason for that is because I had a bag of mixed intentions. So the universe reflected back to me a mixture of me having like this half belief in the abundance mindset, but also still hanging on to and testing the fears, which I still hold in my emotional body and still form my worldview around. Do you feel similarly or?
Yeah. I know what you're talking about. I know exactly what you mean, because if you're holding that resonance, if you're resonating a place of doubt, then those doubts will be reflected to you without a doubt.
Right.
But also, if you have faith more broadly in a higher power, that everything that's going on is for your highest good, then those instances of fear are not as critical, you know?
Right.
That's the way that I think about it. But the other thing about myself is that, I was just explaining this to a buddy yesterday, I have this tendency, if I'm playing a video game, to heavily over prepare for everything. So like, I'll wait till the last minute to upgrade my weapon, or I will stockpile way more troops than I need before I invade, or, you know, it, like, I like to wait until the cards are stacked so hard that it's easy. Yeah. And that's my savings mentality as well. So
interesting.
At that point, it's like, even if I make a mistake, it's not a big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's my own attitude about it. I don't like to cut it close. You know, I like it to be an overwhelming victory. So, It's both the energetics, right?
Yeah.
And it's the preparation and the practical real world application, being in the world, but not of the world, balance.
Yeah, you know, and everything that we experience in a way is the flow, right? There is like the flow of the highest self, or there's the flow of the highest self mixed with lower selves, or there's the flow of just the lowest self, the self that's just completely asleep and, you know, running on fears. I mean, it's all designed, right? It seems like it's all designed this way. So we're all experiencing exactly what we want to experience when we want to experience it. It's just we, I think, happen to be in this weird purgatory between the lower self and the higher self. So we're very aware of what's going on, even if we're not aware at the moments that it's happening. We still turn back and we say, why did that happen? Why did I have that experience, that uncomfortable experience that I did not enjoy? Or why did I act this way? Why did I get so triggered? You know, you can look back and you can work through that kind of stuff retroactively too. So it's interesting, because for me, you know, I just want to be like, how do I get through this? I don't want to deal with this stuff anymore. But not wanting to deal with it is also a pattern in itself too. It's not unconditional acceptance at the same time.
Yes, right. That's actually what I was just thinking to say. I don't usually lean on those terms, higher self, lower self, because in it, there's a judgment in it inherently. Yeah. And there is only one self, you know, there is no separation. And the self is everything and it's nothing. And so what I usually think of personally is the things of which I'm conscious and the things that I'm not. And some of those things I'm not conscious of are serving me. And some of the things that I'm not conscious of are not serving me. Right. And so uncovering those can be really uncomfortable. And then once I process them and integrate them and can let go of whatever I need to let go of, it's like I'm liberated in a whole new way, you know? Mm-hmm. And sometimes the work is like not convenient, the timing, and it's exhausting. And it's like, haven't I been through this enough now? But that's what we're here for, in a way, if you choose it. There's ways to turn it off. You know, you can ignore it if you want. I don't, I've made a conscious choice not to ignore it and to go deeper and deeper and deeper into that. And it has benefited me. But it's also made me outside of society in a lot of ways. I don't do a lot of the things that are commonly normal to most people these days, as a result of my awareness around how those things affect me, which can be a little isolating, you know. But you just got to find your tribe gradually.
Yeah, have you connected with anybody at your new locale?
Yes, actually, so many people. It's
awesome.
It's an adjustment, but yeah, it's a good vibe here in Austin. I like it.
Yeah, there are a lot of Bitcoiners there.
There are, yeah, and the Bitcoiners are. I mean, I just keep meeting new ones all the time. Yeah, it's tremendous.
Wow. That's super cool. Why don't we talk about your book? You're continuing to write?
Yeah. I'm about 40 pages into a book. I do not know how long it's going to be, but the idea is to provide a framework as I see it for this renaissance that we're engaging in. In a way, I think that Bitcoin is going to be the leading edge of that renaissance, because Bitcoin is going to be the center point of the energetic potential around it in terms of capital allocation, which is what's going to really steer the ship. And so I think it's important to communicate with Bitcoiners about a shared vision, right? It's not a vision that I'm asking anybody to adopt. It's a vision that I'm asking people to maybe look at and consider.
Consider, yeah.
You know, and if they like it, they can adopt it and expand on it and change it and modify it. It's all open source. Do what you want, you know? But the idea is like, it's not just about liberating yourself. We are working together as a collective of Bitcoiners. I mean, some Bitcoiners are like hyper individualistic and they're like, no, there's no such thing as collectives. But if nobody else wanted to accept your Bitcoin for payment, it wouldn't be worth anything, right? So like, it inherently requires multiple people. And so as we coordinate, we get stronger. And if we can coordinate to build communities that make our families stronger, make our education system stronger, make our food network stronger, make everything better, make the materials that we wear and build with healthier, these are the things that I think we've really lost. That like, if you look at Amish society, they don't have autism or diabetes or cancer because they have stayed closer to nature. And I'm not suggesting that we go be Amish because I really like my smartphone, but there's a balance to be found.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the idea.
Yeah, that's really cool. And I think what you're probably trying to get at is like explaining a feeling, because the money consciousness of Bitcoin is really, at the end of the day, I think it's just a feeling, because it's a feeling of faith and knowing that my valuable time is being stored on this ledger, essentially. You have there's a lot of rational back and forth to get you to that point, but just like we trust dollars as being something, like when any adult in the United States sees that green piece of paper with one of the presidents on it, they immediately know that, hey, that's something that I have a feeling about that thing. That's something that is useful to me. It's not just like a worthless piece of paper. And so just like the money consciousness of the dollar or Bitcoin, there's a consciousness to living a life with a more well-connected intention, perhaps. Like in my, I give an example. In my life, I have quickly become really fed up with social media. Like, I just have a hard time scrolling through even Twitter. Like, Twitter I can scroll through for a little bit, but after a while it's just like I just have no interest in engaging with it. Whereas if I go on Noster, it's a little bit more interesting to me, because there's not the people that are trying to connect with. They're not really, I don't know, the people that are trying to connect with the fiat consciousness ideas of social media influencing and all that kind of stuff. So I guess what I'm trying to say is that in this, the Bitcoin economy or the Bitcoin society and these collectives, and we're doing things almost, it's almost like a libertarian utopia. You know, what does that actually look like? In my ideal world for a libertarian utopia is that I'm living life as a human being who just genuinely enjoys learning, growing, and expanding. And so that might mean that I become a pretty good fisherman for a time, and because the people in my tribe, my community, see that I become a good fisherman, they might say, hey, will you teach me how to do that? And for my time, they might zap me some value. And if you just imagine a world like that, where everybody else is, instead of chasing some kind of pipe dream or something, that we are instead chasing fulfillment, chasing, you know, a connection to something deeper.
Yeah. I paid trainer Dan for some dog advice the other day on Noster, because I had dog questions. Noster is a post-fiat reality already. Yeah. It's like, you're right. We're not trying to click into the fiat consciousness. And I deleted my Twitter over a year ago now. Uh-huh. And I can notice energetically a huge difference between the people who spend time on Twitter and then come over to Noster and post versus people who are only on Noster. There's a huge difference in their vibe. And it's noticeable only to the people who don't have a Twitter, because everybody who still spends time on Twitter doesn't realize how noisy it is.
Yeah. You know, and I posted a note about this on Noster too, because when I grew up kind of on the, maybe you'd call it retail side of the internet, where, you know, individuals were starting to sign up and get the internet in their homes. So when I was a kid, we got dial up internet. And back then, the internet was so freaking cool, because people would build forums where they would just go on and share stuff, and they build communities and build stuff like open source software, just like Bitcoin. And there was really no perverse incentive. It was just like, this is a passion project of mine. And in my physical community around me, I don't have a lot of people who I can share this stuff with, but here on the internet, this is a place to do that. I can just share my genuine value. And you can also do things like this with spirituality, where I am going to have a really hard time communicating a lot of these concepts with people in my friends and family, because it's so departed from what they know. You know, I can't have that level of authenticity, but you can have that level of authenticity with people on the internet, because it's just like, hey, I'm just going to put this out there, and whoever it resonates with, they'll come to me. This is like at the beginning, this was at the advent, before all of the algorithms. It was just basically kind of just like your podcast, word of mouth projects, bringing people together.
Yeah, and I'm not sure how long Noster is going to stay like that, but that's exactly how it feels right now.
Right.
I think it could be maintained. It's all choice, right? Because but everybody's going to use it a little differently. It's just like Bitcoin. Everybody saves in it for a different reason. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, it's a communication protocol. So, you know, if somebody wants to build an algorithm that's just like Twitter, and they want to scroll through the clickbait, they can certainly do that. But if they want to connect on something more deeply, I'm sure that an algorithm can be built to do that too. Web of trust, more of a web of trust based kind of algorithm versus just like a engagement kind of algorithm.
Yeah, I'm weaving that into the book as well, because the web of trust is not just going to be online, it's going to be in real life too. For example, if you lived in a citadel and Sam Bankman-Fried wanted to come visit, would you be, you know what I mean? Like, that would be a no-go for me. And so there will be people that are excluded from this community, or maybe there will be sort of layers of admittance. And I know that exclusivity can be harmful at times, and it can be harsh for some people, but I think it's essential for a healthy functioning society to exclude some people from some activities because of their behavior. And there's a lot of scammers that need to be held accountable.
Yeah. Yeah, you definitely have a good point, because, you know, what that triggers in me is like this inclusion programming that we've all been subjected to for decades now, where, you know, you should love everybody and everybody is, well, everybody's an equal. I guess that's a part of our founding document for this country, is that everybody's an equal. However, I completely agree with you that it's not about discriminating in the sense that I would say the mainstream culture is trying to force us to believe, but instead it is filtering out people who have similar intentions, you know? So you're building a citadel, building a new society where the intention is to seek that fulfillment, to seek that authenticity, then you want people to also be there doing the same. Because if you have even just one person who's there, like a Sam Bankman-Fried, you see the value that they try to put into your community, and you immediately see that it doesn't fit. And it's right. Then becomes a leech upon your society and upon your culture, I guess.
Right. Yeah. I don't know if you've read Hans Hermann Hoppe, but he basically argues that if a group wants to be exclusive and if they want to have a policy that only allows certain types of people to live there, it's best for everyone if you allow those people to do that, because then they all go to that place and they live by their values, and the pros and cons and everything that come along with that, they experience that over there, right? Yeah. To allow people to live by their own values without forcing your values upon them is, I think, the only way to have peace, really. The policies of postmodern 2025 reality, where everybody has to have the same stuff or whatever, is harmful, actually. It's forcing people to get along or whatever, or forcing people to be inclusive is never going to work, in my opinion.
Yeah,
it causes more conflict.
Yeah, you know, there's something that I noticed in your podcast feed that I wanted to hit on, and it's more rational, I guess, than spiritual. But I am curious how spirituality would play into it. But the title of the episode is something like conflict resolution.
Oh yeah. The communication episode about NBC.
Yeah. Yeah. I listened to, a podcast called The Peace Revolution, and it's an older podcast, but there is one particular episode where they focus on communication and kind of doing what's called a needs assessment. And I think that is so, I really connected with the message of that episode, because if we were all, I mean, this is like that, I, to me, would be like the first necessary evolutionary step for mankind to get out of all of this BS. If we
totally agree. I'm writing my chapter on ethics is grounded in exactly this thing. Yeah, and it's basically, the idea is everybody has needs. Every human being has essentially the same universal needs different people to different degrees, but everybody can get their needs met without compromise and without forcing anybody to do anything. That's the general approach. Sounds utopian, sounds easy, like too easy to be true. But if you follow the philosophy fully and you intertwine that philosophy into the culture, I think that it could be true. It's just that everything is kind of oriented in a way right now that is making things worse rather than allowing for things to be neutral or to get better. And before you can start having a conversation about healing old wounds, first you have to stop the harm. And so I think stopping the harm is what Bitcoin will do eventually. And then the next step will be uncovering all the damage and healing the relationships between nations, between races, between people, to bring everyone into a place of more compassion, which is spiritual, but it can be done through a rational lens, in my opinion. I mean, it's all one thing at the end of the day. Like the most rational thing to do is to be compassionate and the most spiritual thing to do is to be rational. So I'm glad that Bitcoin is here to enable that alignment, because up until that, it was much harder to see. It was always there. It just wasn't obvious, at least not to me. It took Bitcoin to really liberate me enough to understand that, you know.
Yeah, the spiritual element of that, of the communication, is it's definitely there, and I think that's ultimately where it has to go. Just to give you an example, so let's say a husband and wife are fighting about something or come to a disagreement, because we're not at this point, this is even before a fight, but they come to a disagreement, or maybe the husband is doing something that the wife doesn't like, but she goes to the husband and they work on a genuine needs assessment. What did you call it in the communication episode?
Yeah, so needs assessment is good, but it actually starts, so I can walk through the process really briefly. It starts with an observation where you say, this is the thing that happened. So you left an upper decker in my toilet, and when that happened, I felt disgusted and angry and disappointed because I have a need for cleanliness and respect. And so like basically what you do is the observation is the upper decker. Then you talk about the feelings. It's important to talk about the feelings and not skip right to the needs, because the feelings part is the part where you can really connect to somebody heart to heart, because everybody experiences feelings. So when you say, I'm feeling sad, then I realize, okay, there are times in my life where I've also felt sad. And like, I know where he's at right now. And it makes a real empathetic, energetic connection, right? And then you can get into the needs and you can say, because I have a need for cleanliness and respect and consideration. Those are the needs that are not being met by you leaving an upper decker in my toilet. So like, then you can, the last step is the strategy. And the strategy might be, please just use the toilet like a regular human being next time. That would be a strategy. But some people, they just jump straight to the strategy part. They don't talk about the needs, the feelings, or the event. They say, stop leaving dishes in the sink. Okay. And not only is that not a request, that it's a command, it skips over the connection part. Right. And it just, it's like using your words like a weapon almost. So that's why the system is called nonviolent communication. I don't particularly love the title, and neither did the guy that invented it. He used it mostly because that's what enabled him to to get the message out there. But I would probably call it compassionate communication is like the way I think about it, or heartfelt communication. So anyway, that's just a silly example, but you get the idea.
Well, but I love the example because there's also the perspective of me who left the Upper Decker, right? So maybe my, let's talk about my needs. So I think it's funny, you know, like it makes me feel good because I think it's funny, you know? So, and I have a need to, I don't know, feel appreciated through comedy, let's say.
Right. There you go. And, yeah.
You know, so it's like, and then knowing these things about one another, we can come to a solution where I can be appreciated for comedy because then you can say, oh, okay. So I have a sense of humor. Here are things that I find are funny that don't break my needs for cleanliness. You know, maybe you could try those kind of things. And then there are also times, and this is where the spirituality and you could call it shadow work or whatever you want to call it, comes in, is if you hit a wall, and this happens a lot in relationships where, you know, you'll hit a wall where the wife, she says, well, I need this. And the husband says, well, I need this. How do we, these two needs just simply don't jive. And right. There are compromises, right? So you can take turns. So you could say, if I have to sacrifice my need to meet yours, then we'll just take turns and we'll kind of, and that would be called a compromise. Or we use this as an opportunity for each of us to understand where these needs are coming from. I mean, and I guess kind of the way that I think about it right now almost is I'm seeing this almost like a last resort, and it really shouldn't be. You know, if we go back to our previous example too, I think that any need can also be looked at from a spiritual perspective. So, you know, you had mentioned that you connect cleanliness and respect, right? So if I'm not keeping your stuff clean, you are feeling disrespected. So there is a way that you are seeing the world, which is causing you to feel disrespect when someone else is not creating the world or treating the world around you in a way that you expect it to be treated, which is actually in a way out of your control, you know? You can control the way that I behave, but there are still other things that happen that are not, and your reality around you will bend in ways that you just can't control it. So there is an opportunity in that scenario as well for you to work through something too.
Yeah, there certainly are instances in which people have needs assigned to themselves that are not reasonable or that could be adjusted, that mm-hmm. does happen. What Marshall Rosenberg, the guy who wrote NBC, what he said is that there's no compromises in NBC. Mm. Everybody can get their needs met without any compromises, but to be completely honest, I'm not a Kung Fu master black belt with NBC, and I can't tell you how that works.
Right.
By snapping his fingers, he could come up with an example or 10 examples of instances in which that could be supported, what I just said. But I do think he's correct. I think there are ways to address these things without compromise. And one of the things is that sometimes people are speaking a need as a need when it's really a want or a specific strategy.
Yeah.
They're saying, I need you to brush your teeth twice a day. That's not a need. That's a strategy. So it can be kind of pedantic and technical in ways, and it can get a little exhausting. I found that when I first got into NBC, I really got burnt out on it a couple times, but at this point, I've kind of woven it into my life in a way that feels more natural and less scripted. And it's been a huge payoff. I mean, it's it's changed all my relationships, because when people are saying things to me now, I can hear it through a different lens. Mm-hmm. You know, I can hear it through the lens of feelings and needs, even if they're not using the words correctly. If they're saying all kinds of things, blaming people, you know, accusing people, and shouting strategies instead of talking about the core issue. Mm-hmm. I can hear that there's a need behind that. And sometimes I can slow the conversation down to a point where we can get to the core of it. But it just depends how much bandwidth I have. It would be a lot easier for me if more people knew about it and could speak this language, in the same way that the world would be a better place if everybody accepted Bitcoin. It's like, if I could expand the NBC network, like, conflict resolution would become so effortless and easy. And yeah, it's almost as transformational to me as Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. In the same sense that people feel passionate about orange pilling people, like, I would love for everybody to learn NBC, but the ethos of NBC, like, strictly forbids you forcing information on anyone. So it's like,
that's the ethos of Bitcoin too, I think, at its core.
At its core, yeah, but in practice, not always.
Yeah,
you know. Yeah, yeah. Bitcoiners love telling other people what to do.
Yeah, exactly. And I had this. I just had a conversation with Monica Bravo on this very, very same subject. It can be confusing for us as people who believe that the empowerment of the individual is what life as a human being is really all about. But yet it excites us so much, and we want to live in a world where everybody is so empowered, because, well, we won't get into the because yet, but we want to live in a world where everybody is, you know, empowering themselves at the deepest level that they can. And we want to just shout it from the rooftops that, hey, you can live in this better way. You should do it, you know, but that's the opposite of the ethos entirely.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that part of it is the ethos of Twitter has infected the ethos of Bitcoin to some degree. Mm-hmm. I don't understand why Twitter is such a place of conflict. Mm-hmm. I don't understand that. Truthfully, I think it has something to do with the intention of maybe the employees or the code or something. I don't know, mm-hmm. you know, but
yeah.
I don't think that that's Bitcoin. You know, and the early days of understanding Bitcoin for me was like sifting through a lot of toxicity and immature behavior.
Right. Seeing like, that's not helpful, right?
Yeah,
seeing
right.
the stuff that's not helpful, sorting through it.
Right. Like, I'm glad I sorted through it, obviously, because it benefited me tremendously. And the ethos makes sense, right? It's like, if you can't hear the truth in what I'm saying, regardless of how I say it, you don't deserve to understand Bitcoin. But that attitude is not one that wins people over, you know? Mm-hmm. And so what it really comes down to is, do you want a world that's better for just you, or a world that's better for everybody? You know, yeah. I want a world that's better for everybody, ideally. Is it possible? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I would like that. I think that's the ethical choice, based on my values, but I'm not going to force that on anybody else. If you want to be, you know, hyper individualistic and live on an island by yourself, like, go for it, you know, but
right. It
doesn't sound like fun to me.
No. And we've lost the sense of what we can do as a community of people who are able to communicate and understand one another's needs and work together with nonviolent communication. You know, it's difficult for a large group of human beings who don't know one another. And I'm talking about just like the United States as a whole, I guess. It's hard for us. It's, well, I would say impossible for us to work together as a group of 350 million people. But when you get down into a group of 10 who live similar lives in the same place, have similar ideals, You know, that's when you can actually accomplish things. And to me, that's what the opposite is being pushed by the mainstream and has in fiat world for a long time. And that's kind of what's culminating here is everybody needs to be the same. Everybody needs to be accepting. You know, here are all of the rules for all of us to follow, but you can't accomplish anything this way. You know, the only way that you can really live that kind of life as a bunch of people who are separated from one another is you go to your work, you collect your paycheck, you go get your food, you come home, you watch TV, maybe you have a couple friends over, and that's it. It's not about actually building something with another person or connecting, and working through problems together. It's something so weird and just unnatural that what we've grown into as a society.
Yeah, when you were saying that, I was thinking, of course that's the way people are behaving. Like, we're all coming out of like 100+ years of trauma, more than that, like way longer than that, really. It's like 2,000 mm-hmm. years, 10,000 years of trauma since wheat was was harnessed. But in the last 100 years, the amount of warfare that has been inflicted on the populations of different countries by the populations of other countries, and then those people go home and they raise children and they drink alcohol to try to forget what they did in the war, and then they raise their kids emotionally damaged, and then those emotionally damaged kids raise kids emotionally damaged, and it just goes on and on. And then you have drug abuse that adds to the fire, and now we have like cell phone addiction that's separating people even more. And you talk to people out on the street and they're so anxious and they're so divided from themselves and they don't know how to be present with other human beings. They can't even be present with themselves. They're constantly in a storm of distractions that they've created for themselves, which I totally understand. Like, I'm not judging any of it, because what else are you going to do when you're suffering that much? That's the easy way out. So I get it, but none of it's surprising, I guess, is the point.
Yeah. I just feel like we just completely lost touch. What I was going to say is the optimistic side of it is through Bitcoin and through my spiritual growth, I have begun to feel a fire within myself to want to do these low time preference behaviors to take care of myself, to buy things that not for their own novelty, but instead just for their for the way that they excite me, or for their practicality. It's not just to have stuff for having its sake, and the big one is to connect with people, and that's part of why I began hosting episodes on this podcast. Is I just wanted to connect with other people who wanted to do similar things in their own lives. Because going through the motions, it just didn't fit anymore for me. So,
right.
Quite an upgrade.
Yeah. There's two ways to look at it. It's like, did I make a decision to go on this spiritual journey, or did I kind of have to?
Does it just lead there? Yeah.
It almost feels as though I was forced. In fact, my body was shutting down on me like that. I was getting sick more often. I had back pain, and it was ridiculous to have these issues in my early 30s. in my late 20s to have chronic back pain. Why is that so normalized? That's insane. That's like a problem that a 60 or 70 year old should have, you know, and or shouldn't really. I mean, nobody should have that problem, but it was absurd. And I knew that if I kept going down that road, I was going to die. So it wasn't really, in a way, it wasn't really a choice, but it didn't mean that I didn't have to make a lot of choices in that direction, you know?
I'm just going to take a moment and see if anything else comes up, because we've been at it for an hour and a half.
Oh, have we? Wow. It felt pretty effortless. Yeah, nice.
Yeah.
We're ripping.
Yeah, it's been super fun talking to you. All Bitcoiners have super, you know, interesting stories, but I really connect with yours because your authentic project and the journey you've been on is really cool to me. So
thank you Caleb. Yeah, I hope we get to meet in person one day. I think it will happen.
Yeah, for sure. I'm really intrigued by places like El Salvador and conferences like BTC Prague, where it seems like there's so much high signal there.
Yeah, the conferences are hectic in a way, but they're great. I like the smaller conferences personally, and the bear market conferences. The bull market conferences are like, you're going to get a lot of noise and not as much signal. But I was really looking forward to Bitcoin Freedom Festival this year, but it's been merged in with a festival, which I'm sure will be fun, but I decided not to go down this year. Just the travel wasn't going to work for me, but that place is amazing, down in Uvita, Costa Rica.
Okay.
And what the Bitcoin jungle guys are building down there is unbelievable. Like, I actually, I like the Costa Rica scene over El Salvador at the moment, because it's more grassroots, organic, not top down. El Salvador is kind of on the world stage. It's like a big thing. And they have a pretty sordid history in that country. You know, it's just, it's tough. The infrastructure is not there. Costa Rica is more my vibe personally, but I think El Salvador 5-10 years from now is probably gonna be one of the nicer countries to visit in all of Latin America.
Yeah, it's gonna be crazy where that's gonna go, for sure.
Yeah, I can't wait to watch. You know, it's beautiful.
Yeah, I think that's probably a good place to wrap up. Is there anything else that you wanted to add to our conversation this evening?
Yes, there are two books for anybody who resonated with what I was putting out. There's two books that I really like to mention. The Presence Process by Michael Brown. I think that if more Bitcoiners read and did that process, the world would be a better place. And the next one is called Oneness by Rasha. That book is amazing. Those two. Although she says something about not eating meat, and I was like, I'm not there yet.
I know, right?
I don't know if I ever will be.
Yeah. Right. I heard something really cool in connection to health, and I was listening, it was a podcast about Jesus and the way that, but it was like a non-Christian, I should say, perspective on Jesus. And they were talking about what his diet would have been, which was eating things that were alive or just taken from life. So that means like when you're eating fruits and vegetables, you're plucking them right off the vine and you're eating them right there, because that's when it has the most life and vitality. And the same for animals. So you go out and, you know, you hunt and you don't have a refrigerator, you know, so you think you go back to your community and you take that deer or whatever and you cut it up and you have a feast that night and you sustain yourself with that animal that was just alive, and you respect it and you appreciate it for what it was and what the earth had given you. And so, because I've also gone back and forth from a spiritual perspective, is it like, should I be taking the life away from something in order to sustain my body? Is the earth actually providing this thing for me to do this? Or, you know, I mean, what's the difference between an animal that can show, I guess an animal can show pain and a plant can't. So that's the main difference, is that it has life. It can look at you in the eye. You can connect with it in a different way, but I don't know. But when I heard that perspective, it was validating, I guess, my current lifestyle anyway, which is I do like to eat meat. So,
yeah. First of all, I love Jesus, forever. Mm-hmm. I was reading the Bible today and it said that, John the Baptist was eating a diet of locusts and honey. So, you know, you can live whatever kind of life you want and you can be a spiritual being. If you want to eat bugs and be spiritual, you can do that too.
Right.
That surprised me. I found that quite funny, but, I feel very aligned with eating beef. I would prefer probably to be eating bison, elk, and duck because they're native to North America, but we wiped out most of the bison in a attempt to wipe out the Native Americans. And I would love to see the bison population repaired in the US. I do not know what that looks like, but I would love to see more native species brought back for game hunting, rather than what we're doing now. But I hear you on the aliveness of the food. That reminds me of something my buddy Govinda told me down in Uvita. He eats raw vegetables. That's all he eats, is uncooked vegetables.
Right.
And he said the same thing. He's like, all of this is living food, you know? And everybody's got their thing, and I respect it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's like, as long as you're not doing it from a place of spiritual ego, you know, it can be hard because, you know, you want to do what's right by yourself, by your highest self, and I guess by the greater humanity. And so it's easy to look at the world by judging it and seeing yourself as spiritual and them not, kind of like what you were saying earlier with the higher and lower selves, and just instead of seeing yourself as separate from it, but instead you understanding that you are one with it. I think that's really probably what this whole journey is all about, is integrating into one, you know. Like, it's almost like the universe has fractalized itself down into actually I wrote a short little story on this, which is the universe becoming aware of itself, and it just fractalizes down into nothing, into nothing, but into infinite little pieces, and then all those infinite pieces realizing they're all the same and working themselves back up again.
That's literally exactly what it is. I like the way you put it, fractalized. I think that's probably the perfect way to put it. I might borrow that. It's beautiful.
Right. It's like we pretend, we basically are born into a reality where we're just pretending that we're separate, and just to feel what that's like, to feel separate from all that is, and to experience it in isolation.
Yes.
Cause it's contrast, right? That's really what I think, that's kind of what reality and rationality, really what it all is. It's, what is a thing, what is not a thing, and what are they like when they're all together, and then realizing that we're all the same in spite of all that is like, it's so hard for us to understand, but it's really fun to figure it out.
Yeah, I don't think it can be understood really or explain.
Right. Exactly. But it can right.
Can be experienced.
Yes. Yes.
I have
experience. Yeah, because like the understanding aspect is. Let's see. It's it by itself is limited in just in definition, kind of. So, you know, we're so used to the fiat world is super, super rational and spirituality kind of takes a back seat. But what if we live life as spiritual beings and we use rationality as a tool for communication and for getting along in the world?
Yes. Yeah. You just don't want to let the mind run you. You know, the mind is a tool. It's not to be, not to let it overpower things.
Yeah. Well, and they say that you're supposed to lead with the heart, and
yeah,
that's a big, it's a big transition because like
hard.
I feel, yeah. Like I, when it's I feel my body and feel my consciousness, it feels like it's in my head personally.
Ah, yeah. Mine shifts depending on my consciousness in the moment.
Uh-huh.
But, and I do make a practice of lowering my consciousness down into my body a lot, but leading with the heart all the time. I mean, you can get yourself into a lot of trouble. You can give away everything you own, you know, you can, you can end up in a place where people take advantage of you because they have nothing and you have what they want. So yeah, it's a balance between the heart and the mind, I think, is required. But the more people that can live in a heart-centered place, because they're in abundance, the less we have to worry about theft and violence and all these things that we worry about today.
Yeah. Yeah. And I always come to the same conclusion when I really get down into the nitty gritty of the utopic, authentic, you know, totally authentic human race, which is that I don't think we actually necessarily need money in that race, because if we're all or in that reality, because if we're all just living in flow and doing what we enjoy, I think that the greater design ultimately just takes care of us. So we'll find that we won't have to worry about where our next meal is coming from, but instead our interests and our passions will take us to the next meal and or bring the next meal to us. And we don't really even have to think about any of that anymore. It just becomes like this gigantic playground where, you know, everybody is just flowing and things are just working out in insanely and unexpected ways but because there is no expectation, it just works out.
Yeah, that sounds like the kingdom of heaven. I mean, it's possible. Exactly. It's exactly. Here now. It's just we get in our own way.
Right.
Yeah. Yep. It's within all of us.
For sure.
To do that.
That's right. The kingdom of heaven is within you. That's right.
Yeah.
Cool, man. Well, this has been super fun. We should definitely do it again. Or if I'm ever in Austin, I would love to get together. It'd be super really cool to meet you in person.
Oh, absolutely, man. I've got a couch you could crash on if you want to come out.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. Well, is it cool if I bring the three kids and the wife?
Oh, yeah, to stay on this one couch? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, three kids, man. Good for you. I'm proud of you.
Yeah. That's dude, great. It's been crazy. Transition to full-time dad. So I'm taking care of the three kids, and you talk about a spiritual journey, a spiritual test. It's been quite a challenge, and I knew it would be. And that was a big reason for wanting to do it, is because I knew that the main reason for not wanting to do it, because it would be too difficult. And I didn't want to let that be the reason for not spending time with my kids all the time.
Right.
So yeah. I'm going to let go of that version of my life, let go of that timeline, if you will. And I'm going to work through this stuff, and we're going to have an awesome family as we go along and work through some of that some of those resistances.
That is fantastic. I know you're going to look back at these years and you're going to say, I'm so glad I did that.
You know? Right. Right.
Yeah.
Yep. For sure. Try to be the change as we've been hinting at this whole time, just being the change and making the change within and letting it reflect out.
Yes. Yes.
All right. Oh yeah. Before we, do you want to, how do people connect with you and your, do you have a way for people to look up your new show yet?
Not the new one, but if you want to go to my landing page, it's at sourcenode.xyz. And I have links to my Bitcoin magazine articles and my podcast on there. My NPub is on there. So you can find me on Nostr. If you search SourceNode on Nostr, you can find me there too. I am not on any other social media, Nostr only, but down to hang out, chat with anybody, say good morning, you know, it's good times.
Yeah, that's great, man. Well, thank you very much again, and good luck to you in the new endeavors, and we'll continue looking for more communications in the community Telegram group too. So
absolutely, thanks for taking the time, man. It's great chatting with you.
Yeah.